Thursday, and that means it is time for another episode of Renegade Radio. Actually, we're interrupting a current broadcast of Renegade Radio to bring you a live version, so we have that going for you guys that are tuning in today. And today, we are going to be talking legal matters on Renegade Radio. Now, for those of you who are getting excited and thinking, hey, I'm a renegade, and I have run into the popo, and I have some legal trouble, this is not the show for that one. We'll do another show on that because I'm sure all of you have some interest in it. Today, we're actually going to be talking more on the business side of the legal system and really helping you guys out there who are running your businesses make some good decisions when it comes to setting things up and getting them to run correctly. I'm joined by Helen Rice from Robinson & Miller. Helen, welcome to the show today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about Robinson & Miller and who you guys are, and then we'll start jumping into some detailed questions about how you can actually help business owners make a more profitable business, breaking some of the conventional rules, but living within the rules that we have to when it comes to the legal system.
Sure, sounds good. Well, Robinson & Miller is a small law firm in Alpharetta. We're off of Old Milton Parkway. We've been at that location for 6 years now, and there's three lawyers there. Our primary focus in our practice is on estate planning. We draft wills and trusts. We help people with probate of estates and also with guardianship needs. But we also work with a lot of small business owners, whether they're just starting out and they need entity formation assistance, or maybe they're taking on a partner or an investor and there's a need to sort of define the relationship or make some changes in the business structure. We are able to help with that. Also with the sale of businesses or people who want to do some long-term planning so that there's some value in their business and they can think about selling it or maybe leaving a legacy of the family business to their children someday. We help people do that kind of planning as well. And it actually dovetails really nicely with the estate planning piece. For small business owners, a lot of the value in their estate is usually in their business. So we kind of look at the whole picture and try to help make sure it's all planned as well and as cohesively as possible for the family.
Well, I want to come back to the sales side of thing here in just a little bit, because we had a show a couple days ago, and it was on selling your business and some of the things that people need to know. So I think that'll be a great topic to put right behind that last show. But before we get into selling the business, let's start on the front end. Let's talk a little bit about setting up a business. We've got a lot of people out there now that are maybe, you know, divesting out of corporate America, and they're going out into business on their own, and they think they know what they need to set up. Maybe they're getting information or advice from somebody. What are some of the things that you need to know just right from scratch if you're going to start a business?
Absolutely. Well, I think a lot of people get really excited about their business idea and their ability to do the thing that is that they have their vision of doing. And that's awesome. You know, that's what entrepreneurship is all about. But the important thing, I think, is always to consult with some experts and make sure that you have a plan for the actual operation of the business itself. A lot of small businesses, unfortunately, fail because people don't have that plan in place. So it's really good idea to start interviewing some CPAs who know what they're doing and talking to some lawyers about your business structure. One of the basic fundamental decisions you have to make right out of the box is, are you going to operate your business in your own name or under a DBA just as a sole proprietorship? Or are you going to look at forming an entity of some sort with the Secretary of State, like a limited liability company, a partnership, or even a corporation in some situations? And a good attorney will be glad to sit down and meet with you, try to understand what your business objectives are, and make some recommendations that, of course, when you're just starting out, you want to be cost effective, and talk about the different structures and why they might work for you. I like LLCs. I work with a lot of small business owners and particularly real estate investors who choose LLCs because they offer, just as the name implies, liability protection, which is a really important thing to think about when you're starting a business. Most business types carry some kind of liability. And if you form an entity, one of the advantages of doing that is that you can kind of compartmentalize some of that liability and keep it off of your own personal assets and your personal things like your home and your family assets.
Now, when you do that, you can help me understand the dynamics of it. Is it also important to pay attention to the way that you now run the business after the fact? I mean, doesn't it have to be distinguishable that your business is a separate entity? And sometimes, you know, single business owners can run their business like it's their own personal, like, you know, their own personal checking account, et cetera. It's not clear there's a business entity, and that will kind of, that'll void that line, right?
That's right. That's a huge pitfall. And it does eliminate a lot of the liability protection if you're using that business bank account as your own personal bank account. If you get into trouble down the road and you say you are sued by someone for some kind of incident, the attorneys can subpoena your bank records and go back and look and see how you've been using it. And if you've been paying personal expenses out of the business account, you can lose some of that liability protection. You know, in law school, they call that piercing the corporate veil. Some people are familiar with that term, but that can be done. So it's really important for tax reasons. A single member LLC is often treated as a pass-through entity, so there's no real difference from a tax standpoint. But from a legal and a liability standpoint, keeping your accounts separate and managing everything appropriately is huge.
Are there common mistakes that new business owners make in this regard? I mean, you know, the mindset these days, if there's a conventional thought process, and we always talk about breaking those conventional rules, but if there's a conventional thought process these days, maybe for a new business owner, it's, you know, don't spend any more money than you have to. You can Google anything you want to know and look the information up and do it yourself.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you can do it on LegalZoom, right?
That's right. That's right.
And it's a lot cheaper,
sure,
because every business is exactly the same, right? And that's what LegalZoom sells. And frankly, that's what some attorneys sell, is here's how you do it. You have to do it this way or you're not doing it right. And I think an attorney or a website that tries to tell you that is doing you a disservice. Every business and every individual and every family situation is different. And so a good professional is going to sit down with you, get to know you, listen to what your plans and your goals are, give you some practical advice about how to accomplish that, and then structure something that works for your business. I've seen some great businesses have some really fascinating plans. They go to some lawyers and pay a lot of money for a really cool plan that sounds great on paper, but in the operation of the business, it just doesn't work at all. And at some point, they have to scrap it and start over. That's unfortunate, and it can be avoided. If you meet with somebody who really wants to get to know your business first, then hopefully you can craft a plan that's going to work for you over the long term. But yeah, there's lots of mistakes, unfortunately, that we see over and over. A complete lack of planning, unfortunately, is probably the biggest one. People don't come and see a lawyer because they are trying to save costs, which is understandable, until they need one. And sometimes by then, cleaning up the mess is more expensive than avoiding the mess in the first place. And so that's really the most unfortunate situation that we see.
Well, what does it take? I mean, what type of investment are you really looking at to keep a business attorney in your pocket? I mean, if I want to know that I've got somebody to go to, and we've seen all types of services try to deal with this, like, you know, like some of the prepaid legal services, the attraction to that was you can have someone on call. But for, I mean, that's great, but it's an 800 number and I got to dial in. I mean, but to have somebody face-to-face like you that I can look, see, you know, and get together with and talk about my specific business. What am I looking at as a business owner?
Right. Well, I think an attorney ought to be willing to meet with you at no charge to initially.
You
to
heard
get
that.
To know you.
No charge. There's no charge. No. Okay.
For at least a 30-minute to an hour consultation.
At least the beginning. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to get to know you and have an understanding of who you are and what you need. There shouldn't be any charge for that initial meeting. And a lot of people think in order to have an attorney you can have a relationship with, you have to have them on retainer. And that's not necessarily true either. I like to work with a lot of my clients on a flat fee basis. You come to me, we talk for an hour. I understand you need an LLC. I understand, you know, basically what documents you need. I'm going to try to quote you a flat fee for the cost of setting that up. So there's no surprises in that. That means no hourly bills. You know exactly what it's going to cost and what you're going to get at the end. Now, once you have that, you can walk away and run your business and everything's good. 6 months down the road, you have a contract question or a need, or you want to come back and revisit something, you know, then we'll talk about it again and we'll arrive at a flat fee for the additional work, or I do have an hourly rate and you can be billed on an hourly basis depending on what the specific need is.
Okay, so there's no real excuse for not having good planning set up front. Now, do you engage in the beginning with your business owner with his other professional services? You know, I mean, it seems to me that the CPA should be talking to the lawyer, should be talking to the financial planner. If there's a business coach involved or a consultant involved, they should be in the conversation. Do you find that you're in that inner sanctum?
Not nearly enough. That would certainly be an ideal arrangement. I would love it if it worked that way every single time. And it's certainly better when that's the plan and everybody's on board with the plan and there's no, you know, miscommunications, like playing that game of telephone, you know, where the client, you tell the client something and the client goes to the CPA and tells them something that's not what the lawyer said, and then everything gets confused. It can all be avoided if everybody's on the same page and working together. So that's awesome when it can work out that way. Certainly, I'm going to tell a client who doesn't have those kind of relationships that they should go and develop them. And then hopefully I can communicate with and touch base with those other professionals and we can all operate from the same place. That makes it the best.
Well, let's jump on this topic, talking about confusion in the plan and everybody being on the same page. Here's an interesting thing that I think happens a lot of times early in business when money's a concern and people are trying to patch things together. It sounds like a good idea. Let's go in together. And it reminds me, one of my mentors, Blair Singer, was talking about a word association he did with Robert Kiyosaki once upon a time. And the idea was to give a word and the audience would respond the first thing that came to mind when he said it. And he said the word to Robert, he said, partnership. Robert looked at him immediately and said, lawsuit.
Unfortunately, that really is true. And probably more so in some kinds of businesses than others, you know. But yeah, I've seen a lot of really great friendships destroyed by the whole, hey, let's buy this house together and fix it up plan. And unfortunately, real estate, I don't know what it is about real estate, but it seems to be one of the major things that can split apart two really good friends faster than, or even family members, faster than any other kind of business.
Yeah, well, it's money, too.
I mean,
I've seen people have friendships divided over $5.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
When money's on the table, everything changes for some reason. So what are some of the steps that you find most valuable for somebody? If I came in with a partner or a family member and said, hey, we want to go into this thing together, what are some of the things that I really need to be thinking about?
I think that's a great thing to do. And I love clients who do that because sometimes that's a hard conversation for you to have with your partner. But if you come in and see me, then I can be the one asking the mean questions or the hard questions or the define the relationship questions. And I can try to hammer out on paper, well, what are you going to do if this happens? And what are you going to do if that happens? And what's your expectation about how many hours you will each put into this or what roles you will each fulfill so that we can get all that out of the way up front? And really and truly, businesses that do that on the front end tend to last longer than businesses that don't. Because when there's unanswered questions and they come up later, it creates tension between the partners. And sometimes that grows out of control and can never be resolved. So when the relationship is defined better up front and those hard questions are asked and answered, the business tends to last longer.
Yeah, and the problem is time, right? Mm-hmm. Time is what extrapolates that, because two people can have the same essential vision in the beginning, but one is just slightly off from the other. Mm-hmm. Not a big gap at that point, mm-hmm. but if you take that out over time, that gap gets pretty wide, and, right. and that seems to be where all the disagreement comes.
That's right. And circumstances, of course, intervene too. You know, maybe somebody's got a life circumstance that interferes with their ability to put as much time into the business as they originally thought. Or maybe one partner had an understanding that the other partner was going to do something, the accounting work, or handle this piece of hiring employees. And if it's not getting done the way they expected, then, you know, it creates tension between the partners, even though that may not have ever been discussed out loud as the plan and the understanding. So I think just having that meeting where you really have a frank conversation about what your roles and responsibilities are going to be, and again, it comes back to getting everybody on the same page, goes a long way towards, you know, smooth operation of the business.
So how do you handle that? I mean, when you got two people in who, I mean, they're excited and they're like, oh, it's going to be great. We're going to go into business together, right? Mm-hmm. And you ask one of these challenging questions and maybe they try to just brush over it. Oh, no, you know, we're going to do it. It's just going to be even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you dig in and really make them address these things so that you do avoid these problems down the road?
I think there's a couple things I can do. I can share experiences that I've had with other clients or things that I've seen professionally. And I think that's what interests most clients who come to see me. They want to hear, what are some problems that other people have had with this? And I can share that with them. And I can say, I've had other clients who've said that to me, and here's what has happened. And then they kind of go, oh, all right, well, let's talk about that some more. A lot of people are very open to that kind of guidance. And that certainly, you know, makes my job a lot easier when people are willing to listen. So I think that's the key, is just coming in, sitting down, and having that frank conversation. I know the questions to ask, and I know the problems that I've seen. I'm excited about some of these businesses, too. Some of the things that the clients I work with have great ideas, and they're probably really great at what they do. So taking a couple of hours to get the administrative things out of the way really isn't that big of a deal. You know, if it's going to make your business last longer, maybe have some value down the road for someone else and operate smoothly, it's certainly well worth having that conversation.
How about the other side of that? And then we'll move on to another topic. But, you know, we think about these challenges and getting everybody on the same page because we almost think about what if something goes wrong?
Mm-hmm.
What if something goes right? I mean, mm-hmm. if a business is really successful, I mean, how do you prep clients to prepare for what if you're hugely successful?
Sure. Yeah, it's important to have a growth strategy too. I mean, ultimately, that's the goal, right? You want to grow your business. You want to be super successful. Maybe you'd like to be acquired by a larger company someday. And so you want to build in an opportunity for investors to come along and have a place in your company, have some maybe shares or units of membership available for that purpose in your initial formation. And you want to strategize so that you are prepared for that and you have chosen the right kind of entity if that is your goal.
And this should be true for any business, really.
Absolutely.
I mean, regardless of ownership or size.
That's right.
Okay. Well, let's talk about if we're looking at a business that's going to be successful, there's probably going to be some growth. And the big challenge that starts coming up for businesses is it's fine when it's just me, but now I'm going to hire somebody. I'm going to bring on an employee. What are some things that you run into now?
Sure, that's different. Well, you know, then you get a whole different tax situation. Of course, taxes are a big problem related to hiring employees, not to even go into the administrative difficulties of managing personnel. Then you really have to get an education and some tax consequences and also some human resources law, some do's and don'ts. And that definitely can change. If you go into a business knowing that you intend to hire employees, that might also change the business structure that's right for you. So that's an important thing to think about in advance. And it does create a certain liability for a business owner that needs to be addressed as well. A lot of people, though, I've found make the mistake of not actually hiring employees, but you know, saying everybody's an independent contractor.
Yeah, especially when it comes to salespeople, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That can be a big pitfall, too. People really need to be aware that just because you don't want to deal with figuring out payroll taxes doesn't mean that everybody is an independent contractor.
What distinguishes an independent contractor from an employee?
Yeah, the IRS has a lot of rules about that you could look up and read them specifically. The big things are, does that person have the ability to go do the same kind of work for other companies, or are they limited exclusively to your company? That's a big factor. Also, the amount of time they spend working for you. If they're working there 40 hours a week, they're probably an employee and not an independent contractor. If they're working exclusively for you, even if it's only 20 hours a week, they might be an employee and not an independent contractor. You know, are they using their own resources? Do they have their own tools, like a vehicle that they use in the example of a salesperson? Or are they using their own laptop? Are they using their own? Or do you provide certain resources? That's another factor that can go into making that decision. So the IRS has pretty detailed guidelines on that. It's a question that probably should also be discussed with the CPA in more detail than the attorney, but it's important in a business operation and formation context as well.
So what about that HR side of things? I mean, is that something that you're able to walk people through, or is that yet another person that we need to bring into this mix and have an HR specialist? And does that depend on size of company? Maybe in the beginning I don't need it, but I'm going to need it at some point.
That's exactly right. I think the right answer is it depends on the size of the company and what the company does and how those employees factor in. If you're a real small company in the beginning, you may not need it. Even if you have one or two employees and they're basically, you know, a receptionist who answers the phone or, you know, some kind of basic stuff, we might be able to work that in. The important thing from a beginning consideration standpoint is, are you going to have employees? Because we need to look at some different business structures and some different things we can build in when creating the business that would allow some more room for maneuvering with employees. But if you get into, hey, I want to create an employee manual, I can certainly help people prepare employment contracts and basic things like that, things like non-competes or, you know, other important documents like that. But as you start to get larger companies and you start to get into a need, like I have ongoing personnel problems, I want to create policies and procedures, then you probably need a specialist in employment law.
Well, you mentioned the non-compete agreements and the employee contracts. Maybe let's get on that subject for a minute. Let's talk about what are some of the most important and most used legal documents that you're going to see in a business. Let's talk about the difference between maybe the legal Zoom, here's the template, mm-hmm. versus I need something customized to me, and, mm-hmm. and some of the maybe pitfalls or success stories that you've seen along the way.
Absolutely. Well, non-competes are a real touchy subject for a lot of people, and I will tell you this much. Every state is different in terms of their law and how they enforce non-competes. So if you go to a website and hope that you're going to pull a document off that you're just going to type out or that maybe you're going to buy from LegalZoom, you're probably not going to have any success with that document because Georgia law is very different. And from a business owner standpoint, Georgia law is very employee friendly. With respect to non-compete agreements. And so that's something that you really need to have a lawyer look at. Even after you've had a lawyer prepare it and a very good lawyer, there are many circumstances where Georgia courts won't enforce them. It's a very, very high standard for non-competes, and there's some very specific requirements involved in them. And you definitely need professional advice if that's something you need for your business. That's not a one-size-fits-all.
There have been some changes to that in the recent past, haven't there?
Yes, there have.
What are some of those that business owners might want to be aware of?
Yeah, it's becoming more and more stringent. A lot of business owners these days do business over the internet, and so it's very difficult to... One of the requirements in non-competes in the old days used to be you can't, they need to be specific to a geographical area. So if somebody was going to do business in Georgia, but then ultimately move to Alabama and conduct business, you really couldn't restrict their ability to do that. The internet's made that difficult. Somebody can move to, Timbuktu and still have a business that directly competes with yours if you have an internet-based business. And unfortunately, the law is not really catching up with that as quickly as we might like to see. So that's created a whole new level of concern. I would say, again, I can't stress enough that if you have a non-compete where it's a major issue, it's a deal breaker, and you need a non-compete agreement that's going to be ironclad, you've got to see an employment lawyer because those rules are changing all the time. Anytime there's a ruling in a court, there's adjustments that need to be made. And so that's important to stay on top of.
Well, this goes back to the planning side of things as well, right?
Yes, it does.
I thought this was really interesting. I was facilitating for a group recently, and we were playing a game, and during the game, the object was to create as much product as you could for your company, for your, business during this game. And one team decided to steal the other team's production. So, in order to increase their own, they let another team make all their product, and they literally just went over, took the whole production, the alleged, the production box was the customer. They took the customer and all the product.
Mm-hmm.
And the team that got stolen from, they said, oh, that's not fair. They stole our product. They stole our customers.
Mm-hmm.
My question was, okay, great. This happens in business, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, yes. I'm like, okay, so what do you do? They go, well, they stole it. I said, great. Mm-hmm. So what do you have to do? Well, we got to take them to court. Ah, you got to take them to court. You have no product. You have no customers. You're bankrupt. You're broke.
So and that brings up a really good point too, which is, did you trademark it? Did you copyright your specific product? Did you do the research to find out if anybody else had already trademarked or copyrighted your business name even? And especially when you create a product that is unique to you, you need to look into protecting it. And there's lawyers who specialize in that too. And they do nothing but patents and intellectual property. And
but now if you've got a patent or you've got a trademark, but mm-hmm. you're bankrupt, you have no money to enforce, to carry out the legal battle.
It becomes tougher.
It becomes a law of attrition, right?
That's right.
The company that stole from you, yeah, they're wrong, but they got the money to outlast you.
That's
in
right.
legal battle. So how do you plan for that?
That's always hard in any area of the law. The guy with the most money often has the best shot. And that's just an unfortunate reality of our legal system, the way it's set up. It happens not just in businesses. It happens in personal, situations. I think family lawyers would tell you it happens often in divorce type situations. I've seen it happen in estates, where families are fighting over, whose stuff is whose, and whoever's got the most money to keep the battle going on as long as possible, might win. And it's just an unfortunate reality. You have to hope that there's options out there for alternative dispute resolution, things like mediation that often can be cost-effective ways of resolving disputes, but not always. So, yeah.
So you better have a good lawyer.
Got to have a good lawyer. It's huge. And, if, you know, like I said, planning ahead, it's very hard to fix your planning retroactively when you're in the middle of a lawsuit. But if you've got a good foundation, at least you've got that to sit on.
Right. Well, let's go to the other side. So we've talked about getting into the business. We've talked a little bit about running the business. Let's come back and now we're selling the business. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we've met with another circumstance. Let's start with selling, though, and then okay. We'll move on to the others. What happens if I want to sell my business? What do I need to have thought about already and have prepared in order to make that transition?
I think just thinking about it is a big deal. A lot of business owners just say, well, I'm just going to run this till I keel over. But that's not much of a plan, really. And businesses that are run that way, when something happens to the business owner, tend to lose value very, very quickly. So I think having an exit strategy and trying to craft what is my exit strategy going to be is a huge part of the process. And that is going to vary for everybody depending on their type of business and their specific goals in terms of having value. Do I want to sell this business? Do I want to continue its operation and leave it down as a legacy for my family? Or when I stop doing this, do I just want to close down doors and sell off my equipment and call it good? Everybody's needs and everybody's business is a little bit different. So really taking a minute to think that through and think about what's going to happen 20 or 30 years from now is a huge deal.
What about the situation where I'm going to, maybe I want to sell the business, but not the intellectual property, or maybe I want to license things, or maybe I'm expanding, I'm going into franchising. I mean, lots of different ways a business
Absolutely.
Can transition. What do I need to know?
Yeah. Again, it's very business specific as far as what you need to know. It depends on your specific kind of business. If you're looking at retaining intellectual property rights, obviously you have to have perfected them in the first place. And when you do that, you have to be able to license them. You have to have set it up so that there is a way for you to license them. Or, for example, you know, software companies, I think, are a good example. They run into this kind of thing all the time. If you're creating software and it's going to be for sale, you're selling your product to other people, but your goal is not for them to duplicate and distribute it to third parties you haven't sold it to. So you have to build that into your planning in terms of creating your intellectual property, your patents, your trademarks, your disclaimers, your forms that customers sign when they sell things, you know, all those little pop-up boxes on the websites that you visit. They all have a reason when you check here to accept the terms and conditions. You know, all that stuff means something and it's created for a reason.
I'm surprised more people don't have problems with that because I don't know about you. I never read that stuff.
That's the thing. Nobody reads that stuff.
Scroll down, click the box, move on. You know, right?
That's right. But if you read that stuff, it's fascinating. You might get an education.
It used to annoy me that Microsoft actually made you scroll to the bottom before it would open up the box to check.
Because they wanted you to read it. Well, you're supposed to be reading it. That's the point.
They at least wanted to argue that you did read it because you scrolled down.
At least you scrolled down.
Exactly.
That means you read it. That's exactly right.
So are there avenues that once I go down them, I can't go back? You know, maybe I've set my business up a certain way, or I didn't file something along the way, something that, you know, your mindset kind of skips over early in the business creation. Mm-hmm. But if you don't get it right, you can't go back.
There's not a lot of those, honestly, until you're in trouble. If you've been sued and you're in the middle of a lawsuit, now you probably can't go back and redo stuff in a better way because whoever is suing you is going to see that you did that, say you did it because of the lawsuit, and ask the court to set all of that aside, you know, too late, hate it for you. So the key, I think, is timing. You can certainly set up your company as an LLC and later turn it into a corporation, or, you know, there's ways to make changes within your business in almost every circumstance. I think one of the hard things that I see a lot of small business owners who don't think about is, what if I'm not able to do this for some period of time? You know, what if I'm sick? What if I have been in an accident? What if there's some period during which I'm not able to run my business? And the problem that I see is that if that occurs, the business owner, you know, again, is going to lose a lot of the value in their business during that period of time. So one of the big things I always recommend is making sure you've got documents in place that, like a financial power of attorney or, you know, a backup signer on your bank account, something like that, that you've got an arrangement with maybe another small business owner or someone who knows your business who can step in and at least help it limp along during some period when you're not able to do that for yourself. Because sometimes if you're laying in a hospital it's too late to put that in place. And, you know, it's bad enough if you're injured. It's worse if you've got no business by the time you get out of the hospital. So,
well, let's escalate it even further. Since you're in estate planning, what if you never come back out of the hospital? What if the business owner passes away? I mean, what types of things do you need to be thinking about your business, especially if your idea is the business is going to continue, hand down to a family member? Maybe there's tax implications or estate implications. Mm. What are you paying attention to there?
I think one of the biggest concerns is for businesses where there's more than one person involved. The heirs of the deceased partner are probably going to become the ones who inherit his business interests, which could mean, you know, if you and I are in business and you pass away, all of a sudden your wife and I could end up being partners. And not that, you know, your wife isn't a fabulous person, but maybe she doesn't know the first thing about how we run our business. And that's not ultimately what I really, you know, want to see as my long-term partner goal. So that needs to be addressed. It's important in a business where there's more than one person, and there's ways of doing it. There's a lot of folks buy what they call key man insurance, where the business owners insure each other's lives so that there's some money available through life insurance to purchase the interests of the deceased partner, so that I can buy out your estate and make sure that I retain control of the company and I don't need to take on one of your family members as my partner unless I choose to do so. And that's a really important consideration because a lot of businesses go the way of the dinosaur because of a failure to plan for that. Because sometimes family members don't share the same vision. I think that's probably the biggest consideration. For single member businesses, your heirs are going to become the people who inherit your business. So you have to ask yourself, is that what I want? And do my heirs, my spouse, my children, whoever my heirs would be, know anything about how to run this business or what I would want them to do with it? And if the answer is no, then you got to figure out, am I going to educate them? Am I going to figure out a way that they could sell the business? What's going to happen if something happens to me? It's a hard question that people don't really like to ask themselves, but it's a very important one because it can become a huge problem for the people left behind.
So if you found yourself in the middle of the football field down at the Georgia Dome, stands packed with 100,000 business owners, and you had the microphone and you could tell them a couple of do's or don'ts, things that you just really feel like the message needs to get out, business owners need to understand, what would you say to them?
I think the biggest thing is it's good to be excited about your business. You're not going to be successful unless you're excited about your business, but you have got to slow down and look at the big picture and ask the hard questions, even if they are things that you could never foresee. I think we've all had an experience in life where something happened just out of left field that we did not expect at all. And business owners are no exception to that. It happens. Life happens. So asking yourself a few what if questions and coming up with a long-term strategy, you know, can be done in a relatively short amount of time, but can save thousands and thousands of dollars and hours of headache and stress for the people who have to clean up the mess down the road, which could be you and it could be your family member or your business partner. I think that's the biggest thing.
Well, I think that's solid advice to plan for the unexpected. I mean, nobody ever expects tragedy or horrible things to happen, but they do, and knowing what to do, and especially knowing what to do if you're not there to do something about it, and someone else has to come in and pick up those pieces.
That's right.
So if someone wants to get in touch with you, wants to do an initial consultation, find out either they're putting together a business or maybe they've already got a business running along and they just need to get some things in place to ensure their future success, how would they go about reaching out to you and getting in touch?
Sure. Well, email is always the best way to reach me. My email is hrice@robinsonmiller.com. For more information about the firm in general, you can visit our website, which is www.robinsonmiller.com, and everything is spelled just like it sounds. Also, our phone number is 770-817-4999, and we are right here in Alpharetta. We have the distinction of being one of a relatively few law firms here in Alpharetta, so we're not too hard to find, and you don't have to deal with the downtown traffic to get to us. So
That's always a plus. Well, Helen, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing some information. Again, I think the insight about planning for the unexpected, if I had to take just one thing away from the show, I think that's so solid, because again, nobody plans for bad things to happen. Take it back to the partnership thing we talked about, but you know, bad things do happen to good people, unfortunately, and if you have a plan in place, it's just a lot easier. I equate it to, you know, I've never jumped out of a plane without a reserve parachute as
That's
well.
That's right. It makes it less bad.
Exactly.
Bad things can be made less bad with some advanced planning.
You never want to have to go to the reserve plan, but you like knowing it's there.
That's right.
All right. Well, great. Well, guys, for you out there listening, I appreciate you tuning in to Renegade Radio. We're brought to you each and every week by Renegade Concepts. You can find us on the web at renegadeconcepts.com. And is also brought to you by the good folks here at Business Radio X. I've been your host, Andy Lowe. And until next time, remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking.